Hello, everyone, and welcome to NWR Connectivity episode 343. I'm your host, John Reardon. Neil is out this week, but I've assembled an all-star crew of people who aren't Neil to help fill the Neil-shaped void in my heart. One of which is Matt Zawadniak.
That's me.
And the second of which is Alex DeFreitas.
You know, it's very clever, John, that you bring us all together. You know, the last time we were all together, just the three of us, we talked about Halo Infinite. And now it's episode 343. Did you plan this?
Oh, shit.
Did you plan this?
Whoa. I actually re-listened to that episode a while back because I've been kind of getting back into Halo Infinite, which I'll get into later. But I re-listened to that episode. That was a good episode.
Yeah.
As funny thing, I also re-listened to that episode, not like for any specific reason, but because just like I listen to old podcasts I've already listened to, like when same. I go to sleep, because it's like having my brain passively pay attention to something helps a lot.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So like Connectivity is currently the one in the rotation. And I actually just passed by an episode that I by accident had never heard before, where Neil said that if I want to come on the show and talk about SMT3, he was addressing me in the episode. Then I should let him know. So I'd be down for that.
This was not a plan, but it works out well.
Yeah.
But before we get to that, and also Matt's impressions of Bayonetta 3 from his recent review, we've got some listener mail that I also feel like is reasonably appropriate to this panel. So Chariot Goblin writes in and says, "Hey, Connectivity, with Persona and Nier finally on Switch, it seems like all the big Japanese third-party franchises are finally on Switch. However, there is one still missing. Over a month ago, Sega's RGG team reiterated that the Yakuza, or Like a Dragon, as it's now called worldwide, series, won't be coming to Switch. He basically said that the Switch has a family-friendly image in Japan, and the Yakuza games don't fit that image since they have an underground feeling. Do you think he is correct, or did the Wii U sales of the Yakuza ports scare them off? This email may be late, but better late than never. Thanks, and keep up all the great work. Side note, shout out to Matt Zawadniak for predicting a Yakuza Ishin localization on episode 252 of Connectivity. Matt, I have no memory of you doing that, but like, good job.
Was it a prediction, or was it just me going like, yeah, this is like the one thing that everyone wants them to do?
I would say that I would edit in that scene right now since I'm editing this week, but I'm not going to do that. So you'll just have to go back and listen to 252 to find out.
Okay.
If I was you, Matt, I would just own it. You know, I predicted it.
Sure. I could also say, like, you know, the holy grail for the Fire Emblem franchise is if we get a remake of Genealogy of the Holy War. So,
yeah,
let's make it happen, RGG Studio.
Yeah,
that's bound to happen, though.
Specifically by RGG Studio, too.
Oh, sure. Yeah, of course.
I will say this, this playoff as Switch is a family friendly thing. I really doubt that's. I don't think that's like an actual thought out reason for why they haven't come out on Switch.
I would agree with you, but like they're weirdly consistent on like that kind of thing.
But
like
why'd they put them on Wii U?
No,
the Wii U has Devil's Third and Bayonetta.
Yeah,
it's a mature console.
But like I also kind of believe them, because like when people were like, oh, Kiryu should be in Smash Brothers, the response that they always gave was, well, there are women in Smash Brothers and we don't want Kiryu to beat up women. And it's like,
huh,
all right.
So they're just worried about Kiryu's moral fiber,
I guess.
More so than the
that's
odd.
I don't agree with their weird moral takes, but I do believe that they think them.
But if he's such a morally upstanding young man, then shouldn't he be perfect for a family-oriented system like the Nintendo Switch? Isn't he the hero the Switch deserves?
Well, he's not the main character anymore.
Well, we could just not port the seventh one. Honestly, like, they're not gonna... It wouldn't be the newer ones. It would be, like, the PS3 ones and the PS...
Yeah.
Like, the remakes that would get the ports.
Yeah,
if they were gonna do any of them.
Overall, I would say that... like Yeah, those Wii U versions sold real bad. But like, it's not even just that they're on the Wii U, which like we all know, obviously they were on the Wii U. Of course they sold bad, but they were also ports of 1 and 2, not the remakes. Right.
They were the PS2 ports. Games. Yeah,
and those games are bad.
Yeah. Well, and so, they were Japanese exclusive, so they didn't even have the Mark Hamill dub. So like, what was even the point?
Yeah.
Like, why bother?
So if Sega's looking at that and is like, well, it sold real poorly, so I don't know if we can do that, then like, what? OK, whatever. I don't think that you're making the right business decisions there, but whatever you say, bud.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, like, has Sega felt the Switch bump that other companies have? Like, what have they? Sonic Forces, Sonic Mania, what is Sega?
I mean, Persona 5 is Sega.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
That is Sega, isn't it? All right.
Yeah,
it took them a long time to put that out there.
Persona 5 is not family friendly.
Do you feel like, does the main character in Persona 5 ever hit women?
He does. But only.
He's in Smash Bros.
But only when, well, yeah, he hits the women in Smash Bros.
Yes,
yeah,
that's true.
But, and the women that he hits in Persona 5 are demons, so I guess it's kind of arguable.
That's fair. Why'd they let that, what about Sonic the Hedgehog? He hits women all the time.
He gets tortured in Sonic Forces. That's not family friendly.
Yeah, that's got an underground theme.
Do you know the big meme for the Persona 5 protagonist in Smash Bros.?
No.
For his neutral special, Joker wields a gun.
Yeah.
Like that's the meme.
Yeah.
And he gives Kirby that gun.
Yeah, I don't feel like the Yakuza Smash Bros logic quite holds up.
Yeah.
When you've got Sonic in there just beating up Princess Peach.
Oh, I don't know how much decision-making power the Yakuza team has for whether or not there is a Switch port, frankly. I would like
to see the Yakuza team have more decision-making power at Sega. That could have hilarious results.
For sure. I know that the series creator, Nagoshi, was the one that was like always insistent about these weird moral things, and he's no longer with the company. So,
time for the moral decline of Yakuza.
Did he have an apprentice? Someone to carry on the legacy?
I don't know.
The
he
moral
was like
code?
This is a really funny discussion for me, because like literally those games are pro Yakuza propaganda at times.
Yeah, the you know, morally reliable mafia.
Like literally, okay, I love those games. I strongly recommend you play them. They are great. But you have to understand that Nagoshi is literally friends with Yakuza people in the real Yakuza, and the plot of every single Yakuza game is, man, the Yakuza they're so corrupt, it sucks to be a Yakuza. Nothing like it used to be in the Yakuza. Used to be real great.
The glory days of the Yakuza. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So it's
like Red Dead Redemption.
I love those games. You should play them. You should also probably keep in mind that they're not exactly an honest depiction of organized crime in Japan.
What? I feel like it's probably just a matter of, I mean, if they're gonna put him on Xbox, like ultimately, like the, you know, moral fiber of the main character aside, if they're willing to sell them on Xbox, which granted there's probably some money there just directly from Xbox, but I feel like these games would surely do better on Switch than they would on Xbox.
Well, I do. I agree. There's probably some money there with Xbox, because there was some like legitimate loyalty that RGG had, because when the series was like first getting created way, way back in the day, Nagoshi actually shopped it around to all the major console developers to like see who would help make it. And Nintendo said no. Microsoft said no. Sony said yes. Mm-hmm. So I do believe that there is probably like Microsoft wants everything on Game Pass, so they gave a lot of money.
Yeah,
I don't see Nintendo really caring that much about Yakuza.
No, so, I don't think Nintendo would buy it, but I feel like
I'm sure they'd be fine with it
if Sega's aware of that switch of the bump. Like, I mean, I feel like it would do, even if you just released some of the older ones,
Yeah.
Maybe not porting the PS2 ones, but like if you did some of the PS3 era ones, I feel like that might do okay.
I'm not sure if 6, Kiwami 2, or 7, or any of the newer ones would run on Switch. I'm not sure about those. But everything before that, like you got 0, you got Kiwami 1, you got the 3, 4, 5 remasters, those would all definitely run on Switch because they are literally PS3 games.
Right. And as Persona 5 proved, you can, in fact, run a PS3 game on Switch.
Mm-hmm. And run it pretty well at that.
Yeah.
Kingdom Hearts.
Kingdom Hearts 3 was not a PS3 game.
No, well, I guess
it might have been at one point.
Probably.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. I guess none of them are PS3 games, despite the remasters being on PS3.
Technically, I mean, you might be streaming the PS3 version of the PS2 games. I don't know what version of those games you're technically playing.
I believe they're the PC version.
Okay.
Like the menu backends, when you look at it, they are identical to the Epic Game Store version.
Good.
But yeah, like we all know it was bullshit that Kingdom Hearts was a cloud game. So like having an honest discussion, like it's not a point of evidence. And like Xbox 360 PS3 games absolutely run on Switch. So
Yeah.
Yakuza 0 would run very well on Switch.
Yeah, now that they've finally gotten over whatever was keeping them from releasing Persona 5 on it, maybe that's what they'll move on to.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, Persona was also a franchise that had like proven brand loyalty to Sony. So
yeah,
who knows what'll happen? I just like it, the decisions that they've made thus far on what consoles they want to support, what their moral fiber is. It's they're so weird that it's difficult for me to like make any genuine read on that.
Yeah. Well, speaking of games whose current state is the result of Sega making interesting business decisions, Matt, you reviewed Bayonetta 3.
I sure did.
You gave it a pretty good score. Not as good as my Bayonetta 2 score.
Well, but you know,
still a pretty good score.
I only called it the best Bayonetta game, so I couldn't have given it the highest score.
Bayonetta is like golf, so a lower score is actually better.
Little known industry fact right there.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you guys think 10s were good this whole time? Like, no, Breath of the Wild is trash.
Oh, Justin has activated.
Yeah.
Bayonetta 3 finally here after fucking what, 6 years since it was announced?
That was at that like Switch reveal event.
Yeah, it is. This like the oldest announced Switch game that still hadn't come out?
It was this and Shin Megami Tensei 5 were in competition.
And SMT5 was a year ago.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess this is the last game from that presentation. Bayonetta 3 is, well, first of all, it's really fun like having the review code arrive right after the Helena Taylor stuff started. A fun and awkward experience all around. And then it turns out Helena Taylor might have probably been lying. So
yeah.
Bayonetta 3, it's for those who don't know, it is it's what is called a character action game by many people nowadays. It's an action game where the combat has a lot of mechanical depth that's frankly comparable to a fighting game. And there are like built in combos that you can perform, and you're like trying to select which one is best for any given situation. And so these are games for people that like really care a lot about sitting down in the training mode and getting good. And the game ranks you based on various factors after every fight. And like if you really get into these games, then what you end up doing is you go for the high scores and try to get the best rank on every fight. And I really loved the sense of combat in this game, because the thing that it does differently from previous Bayonetta games is that when they were making Bayonetta 3, they played Astral Chain. And so they took the Legion system from Astral Chain, where you're like also commanding this monster thing at the same time that you're doing your combos, and they just put that in Bayonetta 3 pretty much exactly as it was.
Oh,
But Matt, wouldn't it be more fair to attribute that all to Scalebound? Noted game that never came out, Scalebound?
Maybe a little Wonderful 101?
Maybe?
I remember people saying that Astral Chain was literally just a reskinned Scalebound when that came out, so...
Then it is
true.
I think
that's everything, that's everything now, is just Scalebound.
Then it is true that Bayonetta 3 took from Astral Chain and Scalebound, because they are the same game.
Right, so it all kind of evens out.
There's also some, like, truly wild set pieces in Bayonetta 3. Like, I wasn't able to talk about this in the review, because the embargo was, like, ridiculously restrictive. Like actually, I wasn't allowed to talk about stuff in Chapter 2. But I could talk about Chapter 3, but don't talk about Chapter 4. It was weird. It was that kind of review. Those aren't, like, the actual chapters I wasn't allowed to talk about, but, like, that's how it was. So it's like I literally couldn't talk about stuff at the beginning of the game. So, like, there's points where, like, it just becomes a different genre. And Bayonetta 1 and 2 did this a little bit, but I never, I think, to the scale of Bayonetta 3. Like, at one point, you're just, like, snowboarding down a destroyed building on the back of a giant monster. And
were
then
you not allowed to talk about that part?
I sure wasn't.
Because that part was in the demo.
Sure was.
That was in our preview.
Sure was.
Great.
There is a vaguely Star Fox-ish section.
Oh, good. Okay.
So I know you're looking at that.
The amiibos don't do anything in this game, do they?
You know, I didn't try.
Has anybody tried scanning the Fox amiibo? Will it make you into an Arwing?
I didn't see any place to scan the amiibo on the menu. Okay. But I also do remember reading an interview where they said, like, they didn't want to just do Nintendo costumes again because, like, they wanted to stick to new ideas instead of redoing old stuff.
It's the same old excuse. After this, they're going to go work on F-Zero.
I'm done with Sega's excuses. There's too many of them.
And something that I can't remember. Did past Bayonetta games, like, I know they always had multiple weapons, but did they let you swap between them with the press of a button in the middle of combat?
Bayonetta 2 did, for sure. I don't remember if Bayonetta 1 did.
Okay.
You could have two different loadouts in Bayonetta 2, kind of like Nier.
Okay, so yeah, Bayonetta 3 does that as well.
Okay.
And the weapon loadouts are, they're also kind of on the cooler side this time, because alongside, like, the demons that you're controlling as, well, I just realized I didn't actually talk about why I love the system of controlling the demons, the thing that's straight out of Astral Chain, which it's really cool, because the way that it works is that the demons themselves, when you don't directly control them so much as you give them commands. And so you press different button combinations and then they'll do the attack. And the demon attacks tend to have very long and slow animations. So what you do is you press the button to make them do it, and then you go back to controlling Bayonetta, and then you keep your combos going as Bayonetta. And once you get really good at the game, what you can do is, when you know that you have a long animation as Bayonetta, that's when you go and give commands to the demons. And the better you get, the more you can, like, be controlling both of them at the same time, like, during the downtime of one character or the other.
That is cool.
Getting good at that was my favorite part of this game. Because, like, literally controlling two different characters at once in doing totally different things was wild. It's so, so cool. And again, literally just out of Astral Chain. That's exactly how it works in Astral Chain. But now it's in Bayonetta.
Though in Astral Chain, you had the very fun option of clotheslining your enemies, which was by far my favorite part of Astral Chain. Was just running that chain straight across a battle area and having the enemies run into it and then just slingshotting them across. Astral Chain is a weird, goofy game, and I should replay it at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Can you play as the dog from Astral Chain?
In Bayonetta?
In Bayonetta, yes.
No. Maybe there's something I haven't unlocked, because turns out it's really hard to unlock everything when there's no guides on the internet yet.
Yes.
There were
a bunch of, like, costumes and stuff in the, like, even before the Nintendo costumes, there were a bunch of costumes in the other Bayonetta, so you never know. You might be able to play mm-hmm. as a dragon from Scalebound.
I did manage to find one unlockable secret demon in like one of the only side missions that I actually unlocked. Because like I was looking at the embargo and it's like, yeah, you can't show like most of the main missions, but these optional missions, like you can show all of these. And it's like, all right, I haven't unlocked any of those.
Yeah,
but I'll do my, you know.
I would love to I would love to be like, sometimes you get an embargo and it makes sense because it's like, hey, don't talk about the second half of the game. And it's like, that's fair, like spoilers and stuff. I would love to be in the immediate, like for like the Breath of the Wild embargo, it was like, okay, you can show like the rusty spear and the spoon, but don't show the rusted broadsword. And it's like, okay, what meeting was there where they just had a list and they were like, not that weapon from the Great Plateau?
The rusted broadsword is the first weapon you find.
I think that was it. I wonder if I still have that embargo somewhere. I just remember going through all of our footage with that embargo open on my second screen and literally, I don't know, I think this did, I don't know if it made it into the review or when it might have been in the preview. There was a scene where I just blurred out the weapon on Link's back because I was like, I'm going to use this shot. And so I just made a little mask and blurred out just the sword. And I think it was the broadsword. I don't remember for sure.
That's awesome.
But it was on the Great Plateau. Like, it was the beginning of the game.
That is awesome.
it was so weird. But Bayonetta kind of sounds like that sort of embargo of just like, how did you come to this conclusion?
Oh, it absolutely. Like, yeah. I think it's literally like those big set pieces that I was talking about. They just didn't want to spoil them because most of the missions that I was allowed to show didn't happen.
Yeah.
So. And I get that. I don't like it, but it makes sense.
I feel like let me show a couple early ones because it helps me sell your game.
Yep.
Like I kind of feel like anything that's in the trailer I should be allowed to show.
Yeah, literally stuff in the trailer I wasn't allowed to show.
And I have,
that's bizarre.
I have sassily just edited in the trailer to a review with a thing at the bottom that says this is the trailer and not my footage.
I mean, hey, if you go look at the Pokemon preview that I made, the video says the footage in this video is all from trailers I downloaded off YouTube. That message is not for the viewers.
Right. Right. Yeah, because you're yeah. Listen, all we're saying, Nintendo, we love you. Your embargoes are weird as shit.
And I had to deal with two back to back.
Oh yeah, yeah. The Pokemon and Bayonetta back to back is a hell of a combo.
And they were both stupid. But I guess a hot topic with regards to the embargo has been the ending, and I don't want to outright spoil the ending for people, but I do kind of want to kind of comment on that whole controversy that's going on with especially the Polygon review. Because I feel a little embarrassed that I didn't even like, I legitimately did not even think about that because mm-hmm. I didn't even bring up the story in my review because I just kind of don't care about the story.
It's Bayonetta.
Yeah. It's yeah. 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 But like, it's become very clear to me that a lot of people do care about like at least the characters in a way that I just never did. Mm-hmm. And I was reading through some of the, like the things I was seeing in these reviews and what people were saying about the plot points, and I agree with everything that they were saying. It's just my reaction, like where many people were like, "Oh, this story is bad and it might compromise Bayonetta as a character." I said, my reaction was, "Oh, this story is bad. Good thing I don't care." Right. And I don't mean that in a dismissive way. I mean that in a, I legitimately did not realize people cared about that way. So it like, I still stand by my review, but mm-hmm. If I had known that people did care about Bayonetta's story so much, then I probably would have at least said that, because if it is bad, the story is bad.
Sure. Yeah. It's just not, yeah. If you don't realize that's what you're supposed to be judging the game way? On.
It's really not bad in a fun way.
Okay. I always felt like, and I haven't really played any Bayonetta, but it seems like Bayonetta is a fun character to play through a dumb plot with.
Yeah, so usually sense. That's where I make the distinction between story and spectacle. The spectacle in this game is all very good. There's big flashy things happening, and like even some of the things in the ending are like, it's a big pop-off moment that feels really cool. That mm-hmm. I was like, oh, this is awesome. I love this. But it's all stuff that a writer has nothing to do with. It's someone that was like, okay, what's the coolest thing I can animate right now?
Okay.
And that's the stuff that I was really loving. But like anything that a writer was putting on a page, except maybe as instructions to the animator, none of that stuff I liked. Like I even like the new character Viola, like you play as her for a good chunk of the game, and like she's got a very different moveset from Bayonetta. She has a sword where you're supposed to parry to activate Witch Time instead of perfect dodging. Ooh. And that changes up the gameplay in a really interesting way. And the demon that she summons, she only gets one instead of like them being able to choose them like Bayonetta does, but that one, when it's out, she doesn't have her sword, so her moveset changes to hand-to-hand combat. So like she's a really fun character to play. In the story, she sucks. I really hate her character, but she's so much fun. So it's stuff like that where it's like, to some extent, I apologize because I did not think that people were interested in hearing about that. And I do kind of feel embarrassed that I did not even consider that people might care about Bayonetta's story. But I don't. I can't pretend that I do.
Well, you can only review something from your own perspective on it. So, I mean, I'm going to talk about Neil's stuff while Neil's not here. But I know he's talked a lot about how in his Skyward Sword review, he didn't really talk about how the sky is boring, because to him it didn't matter because he didn't spend much time there. That doesn't mean he disagreed when people said the sky is boring. It just didn't affect his experience with the game, and so he didn't really talk about it. And I kind of feel like this is the same kind of thing.
It's like, in a way, like I wouldn't mention in a review of Super Smash Brothers that the story sucks. And
well, it depends on the Super Smash Bros, because Subspace Emissary is a tearjerker from start to finish.
Well, sure. and I don't say that to say you shouldn't care about the story. I'm just saying that to be like, that's how I thought of it.
Right.
And so if you do care about the story, this one sucks. And that might affect how you feel about it. Yeah. But I can't pretend that I do care about that story. So this is still a game that I enjoyed very much. I do think that the things that I liked about it, this is the best one in the franchise. And like, if you don't care about Bayonetta as a character, then I would say that this game checks all the boxes and it everything lands. So it all comes down to like, will you be disappointed by that?
Well, I'm excited because I, even having played all of them and watched the anime, I can't tell you what the I remember that the plot of the first two kind of feed into each other, and that's as much as I remember. I don't remember how. I think there might have been time travel. I don't remember.
I remember really vague stuff.
Yeah, I just remember that like they, I feel like they kind of looped back around on each other in some way. I don't remember.
I think two gave like critical backstory that was like basic exposition for one. That just wasn't in one.
Well, and didn't two kind of like, didn't some element of its story like lead back around to the beginning of one?
I don't remember.
I should replay those games. I've played them multiple times, but after the first time through, I think I just skipped all the cutscenes. So like nothing about the plot is retained in my brain. I just like the kicky shooty boots. And that's what those games are to me. So it sounds like I'll probably like Bayonetta 3. I think probably. I'm safe.
How is Jennifer Hale in the
character? Could you tell a difference?
I could definitely tell the difference, but also I was literally just playing Mass Effect. So
sure.
But I mean, hey, name a more iconic duo, Jennifer Hale and a trilogy that shits the bed in the final scene.
Hey,
there you go.
Yeah. With that, I've also been playing a game that is much less notable than Bayonetta 3. But it did come up on last week's episode while Jordan was talking about buying Dicey Dungeons, and I was looking at buying that for $2. I came across the thing on Twitter that commented that Last Hero of Nostalgaea, which looks like nostalgia, but if you read it carefully, it's Gaia, which Neil had to correct me on last week. That came out, which is from the guy who did The Fall and The Fall Part 2. They started on Wii U and other systems and eventually moved to Switch for the second one, which were incredible puzzle narrative driven adventure games with like some super cerebral, deep sci-fi AI shit that were great if you're into that exact genre. But I think I was the only person who bought them. And that's not even true because I got review copies for both of them. So I didn't help. But I don't think either of those games did very well, but I thought they were incredible. So this came out, and it's on like PC and Xbox. I don't think it's on PlayStation, but it might be. I'm not sure. But I figured like everything I've ever played from this guy has been incredible. This is one that I can't review because it's not on any systems that I review for. So yet. So I'm just going to buy it. And it is a. It is a Souls-like. It is a satire of Dark Souls, while also being a commentary on the current gaming concept of just constantly remaking games rather than doing new ones.
That's probably where the name comes from.
Yes. The whole concept is that you're in this kind of Dark Souls-ish universe. But it's slowly reverting through graphical eras, getting older and older. So like your goal is to restore it back to like modern day graphics because it's being consumed. The idea is that the way this universe is supposed to work is that heroes would go on these adventures and then they would eventually die. And then new adventures would be built on the memories of their adventures and like society progressed and evolved. But eventually those heroes refused to move on. And so the whole world is just stuck reliving old adventures rather than moving on to new ones. And so that personifies in the world physically taking on this old appearance. So within like literally the first area you're in, like the first room you're in has modern day, very nice graphics. And then as you walk out, like stuff is sort of changing and like some stuff is 16-bit. Some characters are like just really low poly. And then eventually you'll find characters that are literally 2D. There are environments objects in the environment that are just sprites that are, drawn at different angles. So as you're moving around them, they're popping in to be different sprites to be at the correct angle, which looks really cool. And then every time you find the game's equivalent of like a bonfire, it sort of creates this area that warps the world back into current graphics. And you like kind of see it transform. But it's just very visually cool. The writing is extremely funny. The whole thing has an untrustworthy narrator, I believe is the term, that's constantly trying to kill you. To the point, like I just did a part the other day where I'm in this village and I'm going across this bridge and you just kind of hear the narrator chuckle to himself and go, this will be funny. And then a portal opens at the other side of the bridge and a train comes down the bridge at you and you have to get off the bridge really fast. You'll get run over by it.
I agree. That's very funny.
There was another part where the narrator just goes, and then there was a cow and a cow just falls from the sky and explodes on the ground. And it's just it's weird, absurdist humor. But the crazy part is that with all of that satire going on, it's also a really, really good Souls-like. I've played a bunch of these on Switch now, and like I think one of the things that people maybe don't give Dark Souls enough credit for, because it often gets criticized for being kind of clunky, but like Dark Souls plays exactly the way it plays for a very specific reason. and is like extreme, like it has higher animation priority, so like animate, like you can't cancel out of animations all the time, but it's extremely responsive, has a very specifically timed like invincibility window on dodges, and like it's very consistent, and so you can learn it. And Last Hero of Nostalgaea gets that exactly right. Like it feels very good to play. Despite being a parody of the thing, it's that best kind of parody where it's also a very good entry in the thing it is parodying, which I always find fun. But yeah, it's an awesome game. I just went through an area that was essentially a 16-bit RPG town.
So, well, like when the graphics like go back like to that 16-bit thing, is it still like the same gameplay?
Yes.
Okay, so it's still like a 3D game.
Right, it's still a totally 3D game. But like everything looks like everything looks old, and like sometimes it's just, you know, a 16-bit style texture on a low poly 3D object, and other times you're literally looking at 2D sprites that are just sort of like, you know, not literally flat in the environment, but like, you know, always rotating to face the camera, and they pop into different angles as you go by. You know, like this enemies in Doom or something, where, you know, mm-hmm. you have them rendered from different angles. And so, yeah, it's just as you go through areas, you'll go through pockets of different graphics, and your character himself is just like ASCII art. Like he's just a bunch of slashes that you eventually can equip armor onto.
I do see on the Steam page, it's saying that there's character customization.
There is.
It was very funny. I saw the footage of it. It's,
yes,
it doesn't do anything.
I laughed. So I will say, I did move the endowment slider all the way to full, and make no other adjustments to my character customization, with the vague hope that like maybe at some point in the game that'll come back and it'll show my character in full graphical beauty, and he'll just have huge junk.
I've downloaded the demo.
Yeah, it's a good game.
It's got a demo.
It apparently has drop-in online co-op.
Well, Alex, I know what we're doing tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't done it. Has like the message system like all Dark Souls games have. One of the phrases in the messaging system is the word game design. So you'll occasionally get messages that are just good game design or bad game design.
That's
which
awesome.
I really enjoy. But yeah, I like kind of just like I've seen a little bit of talk about it online, but I just wanted to like take some time to be like, yo, this game is legit pretty good.
This feels like it could be a stream game.
It'd be great for that. Pick it up. It's like, I think it's $25.
Yep.
So not expensive, not the cheapest, but I think it's worth that. I think it's decently long.
No Steam Deck information, though.
You'll have to risk it.
I'll be the trailblazer. I'll be the trailblazer.
Well, I guess there's a demo, so like it's not like you're risking anything, I suppose. Risk the time it takes to put the demo on the Steam Deck.
I'm the one that bricked my Steam Deck day one by using built-in functionality.
I was gonna say that I feel like you're safe on anything that's literally being distributed through Steam. But that's probably saying way too much.
The Steam Deck is a beautiful disaster at times.
Which it kind of has to be. Like if it's gonna be a PC, it has to have that level of.
If it was any more stable, it wouldn't be what we want it to be.
Yeah. Right.
Because there's no way for it to be that while still being a stable console experience.
It could probably manage to run things within Steam safely, would be nice. Like, you shouldn't be able to crash it just during setup or whatever you were doing.
Well, I went to the desktop mode.
Oh, okay, so you left Steam and it punished you for your hubris.
Yep, that is true. I was trying to access my SD card. This game sounds incredible, though.
Yeah, no, I you know, it's one of those things where, like, there are things in it where I'm like, oh, okay, that's, like, I think it's a pretty, I don't know how many people worked on it, but I'm pretty sure it's a small team. I believe this guy's last two games he made by himself. I'm assuming more people worked on this.
It'd be crazy but, impressive if it was just one person working on it.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's just him, but I will say we actually did an interview with him, or I interviewed him back when The Fall Part 2 was coming out. And he had a series of videos on his YouTube channel. It's Over the Moon Games is the company. He had a series of videos on his YouTube channel where he was just talking about game design, and actually did some really good ones on Bloodborne, which, like, in retrospect, I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Makes sense.
His name is John Warner, and yeah, it's Over the Moon Games. We did an interview with him for that, and he's just a very insightful game designer with a lot of, like, a lot of his insights that I've enjoyed are all about sort of, like, how the game design affects, like, the player perception and things like that. And just very, very smart guy, and very fun to listen to talk. So definitely check out some of his YouTube videos because they're very good. With that, now that I've got you guys downloading the demo.
it has downloaded.
It good. Is done.
Are you gonna test it on your Steam Deck while we're recording?
I had downloaded it on my PC, but because downloading stuff on Steam Deck can be annoying because you can't download stuff while the Steam Deck is in sleep mode.
Oh, that seems problematic for like any significantly sized game.
I've had to leave it completely turned on overnight more than once.
What a weird. That's so weird.
That is definitely the one thing where I'm like, okay, this should be a thing.
Yeah, and that seems like something that could be patched. Like, that doesn't seem like a limitation of the hardware.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least let it give you a button that says, hey, don't go to sleep until this is done, but then immediately go to sleep when this is done.
Yeah, you can tell it not to go to sleep, but it will not go to sleep then.
Yeah, that's odd. But yeah, I guess speaking of things that never go to sleep, we've been playing a bunch of online shooters because that's just what you do sometimes. Everybody needs to veg out, eat pizza, drink Mountain Dew, and shoot some people online now and then. We've have some overlap, but I thought we'd just kind of go through and do some short updates on what we've been playing online recently. Matt, I know you've been eager to talk about the newest and hottest of all of the games on this list for some time.
Oh boy. You know, have you heard of Fortnite?
No. Okay. I'm unfamiliar with it.
Is this a new game?
Okay, so like, all facetiousness aside, I feel like if you're the kind of person that is listening to this podcast, like, you're enough of a gaming enthusiast to be listening right now.
First of all, what's wrong with you?
Yeah, first of all, what's wrong with you?
But
I have a feeling you probably know the basics of what Fortnite is. But just in case you're listening to very old podcast episodes in the distant year of 2037.
Fortnite's definitely still around. And it's still available on Switch, but does not run. Well,
just in case, Fortnite is the big battle royale game. It's not the one that kicked off the whole battle royale thing. That was PUBG. But it's by far the most popular one, maybe the most popular video game ever. Definitely the one that has made the most money in the last couple of years. So it's interesting in that if you're someone that has like cared about my opinions on video games at all for a couple of years, first of all, what's wrong with you? Mm-hmm. But second, like, you may remember at some point in the past, I've said, wow, Fortnite sucks. It's just a bad game. So what changed? Well, the thing that I've always said about Fortnite, and I kind of pride myself in being remarkably consistent on this, is that what I always said is that the building sucks. I think it compromises the game and just does not fit into what a battle royale should be. So earlier this year, when Epic added an alternate game mode, which was exactly the same but with no building, I decided to put my money where my mouth was. And turns out, it's a pretty good video game. And before I go on, I want to say up front, so that I do not want anyone to think that I'm hiding this or trying to downplay it. Fortnite's monetization model is vicious. It is it is borderline unacceptable because it preys on FOMO in the worst way, where the in-game shop rotates items on a daily basis. And if an item rotates out of the shop and you didn't immediately drop your money to pay for it and get that item, who knows when it'll be back? Just yesterday, there was a skin in the shop that had not been in the shop for 2 years. And additionally, there is the way that it preys on FOMO with the Battle Pass. The Battle Pass runs in seasons, which it refreshes roughly every 2 or 3 months is when a season ends and a new one comes in. And the Battle Pass skins never come back. Darth Vader was just in the Battle Pass. If you did not get that Darth Vader skin last season, you will never get Darth Vader. Period. That is the end of the sentence. So I will freely admit up front that, yes, the monetization model in Fortnite is vicious, it sucks, and it is a very good reason to criticize the game. But weirdly, whenever I see people talk about Fortnite online, that's not the thing that they seem to be criticizing. They seem to be criticizing that it's cringe, that it's the popular thing that has no business being any good. It's just there's this visceral reaction to the idea of Fortnite that people have. And I don't get that. Because like I said, Darth Vader's in this game, and you can have him do the Gangnam Style dance. And you can also have him sit down in a rocking chair playing the banjo with Boba Fett, who's doing the same thing. Like, if that doesn't sound awesome, I don't know what's up with you.
Well, and lest we forget that Fortnite is already canon to the sequel trilogy.
That is true.
And is borderline essential viewing.
Mm-hmm. Spider-Man's also in it. You ever wanted to see Spider-Man with an AK-47? Can't say that I did, but I have. Ariana Grande's there.
The Rock.
Literally just there's a skin that's Ariana Grande.
Also with an AK-47.
Yeah, not even a character played by Ariana Grande. Literally the name of the skin is Ariana Grande.
It's weird because it kind of makes characters like Master Chief somewhat boring.
A little
bit. It's like,
bit.
Oh, Master Chief with a gun. Oh, yeah, all right.
And also, speaking of that Master Chief skin, yo, Nintendo, you dropped the fucking ball. Like, because that Master Chief skin released in a pack that also had Kratos from God of War. And we know from leaks that Epic wanted Samus and Nintendo said no.
Yeah.
Come on. Master Chief and Kratos are both on Switch. Just play along once.
Yeah.
And please promote Samus in anything.
I'll bet they would have done it if they would have made Samus only playable on the Switch version. But they would have never let that character model appear on another platform.
Oh, for sure. And like
that's
literally
would have been
literally just once be cool. Like literally right next to Master Chief and Kratos, which are both on Switch. They're both on PlayStation. They're both on Xbox. Just once be cool. Just
it's
once.
Weird. It's honestly kind of weird that Sony was cool with it.
Yeah.
Like
literally Sony was cool with it. And it just makes Nintendo look like assholes.
Yeah.
But the funny cosmetics, as much as I do love them, are not the only reason that I think Fortnite is good, because Fortnite also does a lot of cool gameplay stuff where it's because Fortnite has more money than God. They are doing frequent updates and changes to the game where there is a storyline that's going along with it that is actually changing the gameplay as time goes on. So when I started playing Fortnite back when Zero Build first released, the story was that there was a war going on the island that everything takes place on. So you would drop into particular parts on the map and it would literally be a battle between two armies. And you would fight alongside the good guys, and then you would be able to claim the spoils of war. And after that, there was a season about this weird reality tree that was shifting reality around and messing with things. And so you could get your own reality sapling that you could plant and grow. And then at the beginning of the match, you'd go to it and it'd be in the same place between matches. And you could just instantly get a really powerful weapon if you'd been taking care of the tree. This season, extra dimensional chrome monsters are invading. so you can find vials of chrome that you can use to corrupt yourself and turn into a chrome blob and phase through walls. Like, things are constantly shifting in the game and becoming new and exciting. And it's a game that is frequently evolving. And it's something that is not reasonable to expect of any other video game, because, like I said, Fortnite has more money than God. But it's always new and exciting. Right now, we've got a Halloween event going on that for just 2 weeks, you can do a ritual at particular altars to the wolf god and get a wolf head, where you now have a secondary ability that lets you get wolf sense, where you can like get the scent on other players around you and see them coming. A couple weeks ago, there was a Dragon Ball collaboration where you could get the Kamehameha. For every year for May the 4th, lightsabers are added to the weapon pool, and they work like lightsabers. It's actually really, really fun. And yeah. there's always quests for you to do during the downtime, too. Often story quests that either like give you dialogue or have you do cool things or interesting things, like getting in the in-game money, not real money currency, but like the stuff that like you use during the battles. And there was one where it's like, okay, get this amount of money and then spend all of it in the same match. And it's like, that's a cool and interesting thing to ask me to do. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's tutorials. Like, did you know that the repair tool to fix a car can be filled up at a gas station? Like the quests are overall really good. Like mm-hmm. they're not super annoying to do, and they teach you more about the game as they're going. Fortnite is good. And yeah. I just had to go on my 20-minute rant here about that.
That's fair. I haven't actually, so when they did the no build update, I meant to go back and try it again. Because I played it when it came out on Switch, me and David and Justin and Neil and maybe some other people had a few nights where we just got together and all played it together, mm-hmm. and had a really good time with it. And yeah, so I like the idea of a no build, because that would always be, I can very consistently get into like the top three in a game of Fortnite, or at least I could. But there would always be somebody building faster than me at the end, and I would lose. So yeah, the idea of not having building sounds very compelling to me.
Are they still doing bots?
So the way that works is that for your first like two or three games, they put you into a lobby with all bots, and they don't okay. tell you that they're doing that.
Yeah.
But when you're playing against those bots, you will probably win. You will right. probably win your first game of Fortnite, and then you'll go and brag to all your friends. Yeah, I just won my first game. And then they'll tell you, actually, that's not very impressive at all. But the idea is that your first impression is a good one.
Yeah, that's an interesting. PUBG does the same thing, I believe.
Yeah, well, they do now. They copied yeah. it from Fortnite.
That's yeah. PUBG is, of course, for anyone listening in 2077. PUBG noted Fortnite ripoff. yeah, that's what the history books will say.
Player mm-hmm. Unknown's Battlegrounds.
Yep.
Yes.
And back in the day when the Battle Royale genre was first kicking off, I was a big fan of PUBG. I played it all the time. And like I was like a little resentful that Fortnite was coming in to just be a blatant copy of it. But over time, like, it's not even just like, I do kind of think that Fortnite now is better than PUBG ever was, but also PUBG legitimately got worse over time, to the point yeah. that now, actually legitimately, the version that gets the most love and care is the phone version.
Yeah, that's the only way I've ever played it.
It is genuinely a different game from the PC version.
I was decent at the phone version because it used motion-based aiming. And as a Nintendo gamer, I'm pretty darn good at that. So I had better control over the game than most of the other players did.
But there is my insane megalomaniacal rant about how I need to be the defender for the most financially successful game ever.
Right. Your rant about how game that's widely considered good by millions of people
is actually
is good.
But I did want to get the word out a bit, because I feel like people made their decisions on what Fortnite was 4 years ago.
And oh, sure.
It has changed so much in the time since. And I think that it is worth a second try. And like I said, that monetization model, legitimately disgusting. If you hear that and you go, oh, don't want to touch that, fair. But it's like I said, when I hear people complain about Fortnite, that's never what I hear them talk about.
Yeah.
And I figured, like, it is worth hearing this second opinion now of like, no, like there's something there. There's a reason that this game is so popular.
And it is worth noting, like, actually all of the games we're going to talk about, that if you are just playing purely for the gameplay, you can play that game without engaging in the monetization system at all. And mm-hmm. you lose nothing outside of appearances, which does not make the monetization okay. And obviously those cosmetics have value. But, you know, just it's not like you need to pay to play or pay to win or any of that stuff.
Well, one of the games we'll talk about decided to
okay, we'll get there. Real quick, before we get there, my much shorter update on a game that I think fewer people think is good is that Halo Infinite has a big update coming out in November, which is just around the corner from this episode. And so I decided that I should get back into Halo Infinite and mm-hmm. get good at it again. And my update on Halo Infinite is that it is a perfectly paced game for how I play online first-person shooters, in that I came back to this game months and months after I last played it, and we're still on the same season. And I'm like, great. And so I just picked right back up with where I was in the battle pass. There's an event that just started that's helping me just kind of grind through a bunch of levels really quick, and also getting me a bunch of extra free stuff, which is neat. And yeah, everybody else is like, oh, they haven't added a new map in like a really long time. And I'm like, I've only played the other new map like once. Like,
this is like the polar opposite of how I just described Fortnite as like constantly changing and updating.
Right. Oh, Halo Infinite. And let me be clear, this is not a good thing. It's just hilariously appropriate for me specifically. Like, the rollout of content for Halo Infinite, and the people making Halo Infinite will be the first people to tell you this, the rollout for content in that game has been abysmal.
I get the feeling that this was not how they intended this to go.
No. Yeah. Like,
I wonder if it is at all related that multiple high level employees at 343 Industries are no longer with the company.
Yeah. Well, and I know like the update that comes out in November was supposed to have come out already. I think it was supposed to come out in September, maybe earlier. And I think they were intending to do more than a season per year.
Hopefully. But
that's about where we're at.
Because like I started playing Fortnite in like May, whenever the Zero Build update happened. And this is the third season I've played.
Well, and, you know, what I will say is, and once again, this is, you know, from my very specific use case. So Halo Infinite so far, it does have the free battle pass where you can unlock some stuff just playing normally. Mm-hmm. And the multiplayer is free to play.
For what it's worth, the vast majority of battle passes do that. Fortnite does as well. I should probably mention Fortnite like created the battle pass.
Yep. Yeah. So not weird there. And then, of course, it has a paid battle pass. And so far, I have done both of the paid battle passes since the game launched, which it's hilarious that there have been two. And the second one's not done yet. But the nice thing is, in comparison to Fortnite, is that I can, if like there's stuff like I haven't finished the first season's battle pass, but if the next thing, like I kind of look at like my upcoming things in battle passes and I go, oh, the next thing in the season one battle pass is more interesting than the next thing in the season two battle pass. And I just switch back to that one. which is a thing that I appreciate them doing. Getting back into it, I still think it's a very fun game, plays very well. Respect that it is not rolling out the way that it should, and I hope that one day they manage to get their feet under them. I do think like the November update adds like online co-op, which they took out local co-op, which the theory on that is that they're still trying to cater this game to the base model Xbox One, which I think at some point they need to split off from that. But that's, you know, just me. What I mean, Fortnite's still trying to make the Switch work, so I guess I can't well, judge them for that.
The Switch is very lucky that Fortnite also has a mobile version.
Yes. But like this update's also, I mean, it's new map. And then it also has the Forge mode, which if you're not familiar with Halo, is essentially kind of like the custom level slash game mode maker, which can then also be played online. It's a very cool thing that Halo has done for a long time, kind of on and off again. Mm-hmm. So like if that launches and launches well, could be a nice shot in the arm for the game as far as variety goes.
Now if they could just get the PC version working,
that'd be nice.
I was curious. I checked in if they had fixed it up at all. It's gotten worse.
Good. I gotta say, Series X version runs like a dream. Have not had an issue. Been playing it every night for the past week. Perfect.
We should cross play again sometime. Remind you what could have been.
I was gonna like the only time I get to experience the PC glitches is when I cross play with PC. So, and like I think I already do cross play, but I think it's like when I have, like when I do a party, seems to be when it crops up, because I see fascinating things when I play with people on PC, that I never get to see when I'm just playing on console. But yeah, good game. Hopefully it can kind of catch up with itself. But if you're like me and you play these games very slowly, very occasionally, then it's literally perfect. But our last game on this list is one that I think all three of us have played to some extent. But
to some extent.
Alex hasn't talked about one yet, so I'm going to let him lead it off.
Yeah, you know how you talked about games that change very slowly? What about a new game that hasn't changed almost at all?
Splatoon 3?
No, Overwatch 2.
Okay. I don't want to derail this, but I do just want to bring up real fast. There is literally a game mode for Splatoon 3 that was in the direct months ago that still has not surfaced.
Okay.
Which game mode is this?
It's a variant of Salmon Run that takes place on the Turf War maps.
Oh.
Literally, yeah. Still hasn't shown up.
Yeah, I'm still waiting on even like the variant weapons to show up in Splatoon 3. It's taking
we'll
a minute.
There. You
would
guys
be great
just
to play that
impatient.
Card game online.
But Overwatch 2, yeah, I've only played a little bit of it. And the reason why it bounced off is for twofold. The free to playization of Overwatch is repulsive. The price gouging is ridiculous, and there are items that used to be like you'd get them through loot boxes, and we could talk about how loot boxes are also unethical and a pain, and shouldn't be implemented anywhere. But like
they managed to do something like worse somehow.
Yes, and now I don't even have access to things that used to be free, possibly free through loot boxes in Overwatch 1. Those are now, you have to pay for them with real money. Which, look, I'm not going to sit here and say that the skins are the reason I play Overwatch, but having some sort of reward to keep you coming back, just like a little bit of a carrot on a stick, is nice. And
it's also just very frustrating to have to know that something was taken away from you like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Or like, to feel pressured in a way, because this is what killed multiverses for me, where it's like the dailies were all terrible in multiverses, and I knew that like if I just wanted to ignore those dailies, then like if I wanted new characters, I'd have to shell out dollars for them, so I guess I'll just stop playing because the dailies aren't fun. And
well, especially since they updated this, they released this as an update for Overwatch 1, like it's not its own separate game, And so that makes me feel like it's, you know, there is some extent of like, this is still kind of the game that I already paid you for.
Right.
Like in my head, this isn't a free to play game because I bought it.
It is quite literally the same game. The right. idea that Overwatch 2 is a sequel was made up by marketing.
Yeah.
There's right. really no metric by which it is a different game, except for the two on the box.
They did change the time of day on some levels. So, you know,
there's supposed to be a PvE mode. And I think that one's paid for.
Supposed to be.
Isn't there supposed to be a store, like a campaign, like a single player?
Right.
Yeah.
The campaign that you're, I'm not sure if it's single player, if you can play with multiple people, but that
it's supposed to be co-op.
Okay.
We still haven't really seen much of it in a while. And obviously, like, they're the shadow of all the drama that's happened at Activision Blizzard. You can still feel it. Yeah. And it makes the game kind of weird to go back to. It feels so much like the same game. Like, Overwatch 1 was always a game that was going to receive a lot of support. Like, we would get maybe 3 or 4 new heroes a year, plenty of new maps. And so Overwatch 2 just felt like, hey, we stopped making updates for Overwatch 1 that were meaningful at all for like 2 years so that we could have 3 new heroes to show up all at once with this new update.
Yeah.
And like, that doesn't make a new game.
And those heroes are in the Battle Pass.
Right. Let's talk about that. So we had some confusion. So what did we decide? Did we decide that if you own Overwatch, then you get those characters for free?
Yeah. So the new heroes day one for Overwatch 2, if you previously owned Overwatch 1, you get them immediately for free. And then people said, okay, Blizzard, what does that mean for future heroes in future battle passes? And Blizzard said, I guess we'll find out.
Now, is it the case that... I'm sure, because I did look at the battle pass. If you buy the battle pass, then you get the new characters very early in that battle pass, right? Like, it doesn't unlock them, but they're like, okay. Because I know I saw her. I think she's also in the free battle pass, but it's like level 35 or something. Like, it's much farther up the battle pass.
I think both of them were just in the paid tier.
I think she might be really late in the free tier. Like, I think it's... Okay. I could be wrong, but I think it's technically possible to get to her.
I think for me, Kiriko is available for quick play immediately, but not for ranked unless I do the battle pass.
Well, ranked is a whole thing. It's literally just like new heroes. They normally don't let in ranked for a little bit.
Oh, that's right.
To make sure that
they did just add her back in.
Yeah,
because I saw a little note on that.
Yeah, it's normal for them to go for new heroes. Like, yeah, we don't know if this is like we're not confident enough.
We have to test. We have to let you test the balance first before we do this. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which was fine for me because, listen, I have like 2 characters that like I exclusively play support because I like to not wait for 5 minutes to get into a match. And also, like, you get through that battle pass way faster playing support because every time I log in, they're like, listen, we will give you all of the XP. Just please, for the love of God, play support. And I'm like, okay. So that's all I ever play.
That is a decently substantial part of what killed Overwatch 1 for me. Because the game, it's a lot like what I said about PUBG earlier, where it's like, legitimately, I think the game got worse over time. First of all, in how they struggled to incentivize people to play non-damage heroes, because every time they released a new hero, it's a fucking damage hero.
Yep.
So, like, obviously people wanted to play the new stuff, and like they kept making tanks worse, so no one wanted to play tank.
That is the one. I mean, the fact that they've that arguably the biggest change in Overwatch 2 is that there's now only one tank on each team, which does make it there less need for tanks in the queue.
That was also something that I hated when they did it in Overwatch 1, though, was the roll queue.
Yeah.
That was like the straw that broke the camel's back for me. Where it's like, that is exactly when I stopped playing.
See, but and like, I guess even, I'm in the weird spot of I legitimately like playing support. So like,
I played a lot of Overwatch ranked back in the day.
Yeah.
Like the first 14 competitive seasons, I made sure to at the very least do my placement games in all of them. And yeah, many times I did more than that. So like, I got really used to the idea of team composition being a skill that you need to develop to play Overwatch. And so like, I got good at learning when I needed to change heroes based on the situation. And role queue removes that aspect from the game entirely. Like,
yeah,
I would often tell my friends, if you want to play ranked, you need to be good at least four characters. One DPS, one tank, one support, and one whatever the fuck defense means. And eventually they got rid of defense and just made tank, DPS, and support. But and that's how I liked it. I liked Overwatch as this game where I needed to be an asset to the team. And that game doesn't exist anymore. Now I need to be good at this character. And that's all. And that's not not to say anything about how the characters got worse over time, too, because very early in the game, the character I played the most was Roadhog. And he had a big thing where he used his chain to pull someone in, and then you would use the shotgun point blank for a kill. And that was not an easy thing to do. But people that didn't play Roadhog didn't know that it was difficult to do. So they just called it overpowered, and Blizzard went, yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
And then the Overwatch League just made everything worse, where the entire game started being balanced for the Overwatch League at top level players.
Yeah.
And now I load up Overwatch 2, go to try to play Mei, and she doesn't freeze people anymore.
Yeah.
Characters got Mei less fun main. Over the years.
Does she not? Who's freezing me then, if not Mei?
Mei's ult can freeze, but her regular attacks cannot.
Only her ult.
Okay.
She will just slow you down.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's legitimately the game got worse over time. It got less fun. And I have been chasing the high of year one Overwatch for so long because year one Overwatch was incredible.
Yeah.
But Overwatch now is not. And like I loaded up Overwatch 2 to give it a try. And I'm like, yep, this is still Overwatch.
Yes. Yes, it is. I do think I don't. And this is, I don't think Overwatch 2 is particular. The main reason I play Overwatch is because there are very few online first person shooters on Switch that consistently have people playing them, which is why I own Overwatch for Switch. So like, I'm playing it.
Well, if you wanted to download Fortnite, it has crossplay.
I know it has crossplay, but I don't want to play it on Switch. That's my problem. So like, my main thing is just I want an online shooter on Switch, and Splatoon doesn't count because that's not the same gameplay.
What I can tell you, John, is that if you want a portable shooter, Halo Infinite runs real well on Steam Deck.
I don't think that's I guess I've only looked at the single player testing. I watched some Digital Foundry stuff of Halo Infinite on Steam Deck, and it did not look promising.
Oh yeah, I haven't played the single player on Steam Deck because you have to pay for the single player, and it's free to play on Steam for the multiplayer. Sure.
Yeah, no, that would be. I would love if I could get a web browser on my Switch, I'd be tempted to just stream the Game Pass version of Halo Infinite to it. I don't particularly like Overwatch, but it's what I have because nobody plays Doom 2016 anymore. What I will say, I do like that there's only one tank now. I think it differentiates the tank role more from the DPS role.
Probably makes it more interesting to play too, because it seemed like everybody wanted to play just damage for the longest time, and now tank, that has to be like a real skill. To just be the one tank on a team.
Yes.
And also, they've probably been buffed too, so it's probably more interesting to play them now.
I feel like it kind of changes from a support perspective. Like, it used to be as support, you were kind of juggling your entire team, Whereas now I feel like how it usually plays out is that one support covers the tank and one support covers both damage. So it's kind of made that role a bit more interesting and like have more of a consistent strategy to it. I don't know. So I don't hate that change. But that's all I've got. I wanted to find something nice to say about Overwatch 2, which is that I like that there's one tank, not two.
That is something nice that we can say.
Yes.
It's not nice to the person who was the sixth person in your group and now they can't play
your
with
other
you
tank. Yeah.
I remember when Titanfall came out. Not Titanfall. The Battle Royale Titanfall.
Apex Legends.
Yeah.
When Apex Legends came out, I was like, yeah, three person teams. It's like, okay, literally every other game is either four or two.
Yep.
Who's the least popular person in the group?
Yep.
I should play that on a system that could run it. I've only played Apex Legends on Switch, and I like played a couple rounds and was like, I can't do this, and deleted it.
The shooting feels really fun in Apex.
I remember liking it well enough. It was in that period of my life between PUBG sucks and Fortnite isn't good yet.
No, like, I'm sure it plays well. It's just the Switch port was...
Oh, yeah. I've heard hard horror stories.
Once you get into that resolution where it's like, it's hard to parse what I'm looking at.
Isn't like the field of view like super narrow as well?
Field of view is bad. And like, it's a game where like, it's a battle royale. So a lot of times you're kind of like hiding and sniping somebody from across the map. And that's hard to do at 240p.
Right.
Many Switch ports nowadays feel like hubris.
There's been, okay, what's weird is it felt like there were a couple, so like Nier, solid port. No Man's Sky, weirdly solid port. The upcoming second port of Ark seems pretty good.
Persona 5.
I feel like we're in this period where there's been like a few good ones.
And then you get Switch exclusives that feel like bad ports, like SMT5.
Right. Like it's, yeah. I don't know.
Someday we'll find your good shooter on Switch, John.
I think it's just that we need to put Halo on there.
Master Chief Collection could probably run on Switch.
Up through 4. Yeah, they're all 360 games. They ought to be fine. And I feel like Microsoft would be fine with it. I feel like Microsoft has probably offered that, and Nintendo's been like, no.
Well, the problem comes in at the 100 gigabyte problem.
That's true. Well, just sell them separately. Or cut out 4. I can cut Master Chief Collection down and make it smaller if you want.
I do sympathize with the problem that the basic Switch only has 32 gigabytes. Well, not the basic Switch, literally the Switch, every Switch, you know, has 32 gigabytes internal memory. So
they could also do what Doom 2016 did and make the campaign and the multiplayer two separate downloads. So like, if you just want the campaign, great. We won't worry about this extra download for the multiplayer. Like, and I feel like you could do the same thing with Halo.
They have to have a whole thing that works specifically for the Switch, because on every other platform, it's one unified launcher.
It's very annoying. Yes. I honestly feel that way on Xbox too. It's like, just, I just want to download one of these. Honestly, I don't want all of them. Please stop putting Halo 4 multiplayer on my console.
Look,
I don't want it.
Here's the shooter we need on Switch. The classic Star Wars Battlefront 2.
Oh,
honestly,
yeah.
Yes. And that actually, please. I feel like that could happen.
Yeah,
a little bit. Yeah,
because they are backwards compatible. Like, so they've had that amount of support.
Yo, the wildest thing about that game is that a few years ago, like the official servers shut down. And so like you couldn't play it online anymore.
Yes.
And then like a year later, they were like, we're updating this game with brand new official servers.
Yep. Yeah,
so
they
like
put it back.
That game clearly has life in it.
Oh, I still have it. I have the PC version. And I actually went and bought both the Xbox versions once I realized they were backwards compatible. Because I don't know if the first one never got a PC port or if it's just not on Steam.
I think it's just that it never got on Steam.
Because the Xbox version of that original game graphically holds up weirdly well. Like, I grew up playing it on PS2, where it was kind of ugly, but the original Xbox version looks really nice, especially at 4K. But yeah, no, I feel like those could definitely show up on Switch. but there's no way they would have online, because that is something they have taken out of, like Republic Commando has online on original Xbox. It does not have online in the Switch version.
Yeah, but that's the whole point of Battlefront 2. Yeah,
you know, Jedi Academy did. That had online multiplayer on Switch.
Please 1v1 me in Polis Massa. Please.
Polis Massa is like the map that, like, as a kid, best map ever. And as an adult, I'm like, this shit sucks.
I still consistently lose on, like, the Naboo streets. Anytime I'm playing Galactic Conquest, I suck.
Oh man,
ass
I want an online Galactic Conquest so bad. I've never gotten anyone to play it with
it's
me in person.
So good. Well, and especially Battlefront 2's Galactic Conquest with, like, the map that you had to, like, actually move fleets around on. Like,
it's a good time.
Holy crap, it was good.
Why didn't that ever come back in EA's Battlefront? And I know why, because EA killed it. EA killed Battlefront.
The best thing to ever come out of EA Battlefront was Star Wars Squadrons.
EA's Battlefront was starting to come together at a certain point. Right as it died, they pulled the plug on it.
Yep, it was getting there. You could, like, see, you're like, okay, and they're we're done.
There was, like, a new game mode that they had just added a couple months ago that was like, it's like, you're going to be fighting on the ground for control points, and once you capture all the control points, you go to the enemy spaceship to storm their ship.
Yeah,
and that's where the win is. And it was awesome. And they were adding it to, like, the different eras, and then suddenly, out of nowhere, all right, no more updates. All done.
Well, and it could be that they're doing the Overwatch or Splatoon thing, and we are about due for them to now announce a new one. That'll just be an update to the last one with all of the content they haven't added in patches.
I hope it's like Disney takes it and someone else makes a Battlefront 3.
Hopefully, but Pandemic Studios. Bring them back.
Do they exist?
I said bring them back because I don't think they
bring them back from the dead. Got it. Okay.
It made Lord of the Rings Conquest. If you ever wanted to play a Lord of the Rings take on the Battlefront format, it's pretty interesting.
I mean,
can I play as a Droidica? What is the Lord of the Rings equivalent of a Droidica?
Shirtless Uruk-hai that lights the bomb at Helm's Deep and just keeps running while you're shooting at it and takes no damage.
Berserker?
Yeah, it's that guy.
Yeah,
that's the Droidica. I did play a little bit of the Two Towers PS2 game the other day to test out a PS3's backwards compatibility. And those games are just the best.
Yeah, good times.
But with that, I think we'll call it an episode, especially since I'm editing and this is already going too long. Yep. So thank
you
very
much.
Oh, God. Thank you very much for listening. Oh, we do have to announce next week is going to be the Wind Waker Game Club episode. So if you want to write in about Wind Waker, do that before Wednesday, the 2nd of November. So that we can get your email on the show. I've already seen some trickle in.
What should we make the cutoff time? Because every single time I see people saying, "Oh, is it too late? Can I get this in?"
We generally record at 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. So before then, would be
if you're
your
sending
goal.
It like at 8:50 p.m. Eastern time. Then send us a message in Discord.
Yeah, honestly, and once you can send it. In an email, you can just yell at us on Discord.
Yeah, honestly, if you message us on Discord, like while we're in the middle of recording, we might still
probably get you on.
For sure.
So do that. If you need to finish the game, do that.
I'm feverishly playing through the rest of it right now.
I probably will not finish it, but Wind Waker is also a game that I've played through many times in many different forms.
I just played through the whole thing on stream this year.
Yeah. Yeah, and I have fresh Tingle Tuner experience, so...
That's true.
With that, you can send those emails to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com, or like we said, yell at us in Discord. If you're not in our Discord, you can get there by going to nintendoworldreport.com and clicking the chat button, which takes you to Discord for some reason. Follow us on Twitter, @ConnectivityNWR. rate this podcast if you're listening to it somewhere where that's a thing that can happen. And we will see you next week for the Legend of Zelda Wind Waker Game Club episode. It's going to be great. Me and Matt will probably disagree on some things.
Yay. A couple of things.
Yay. Bye.
Yay, indeed.